On any given night in Athens, some 200 people are homeless, and many, many more are housing insecure, worried about losing the place they call home.
Athens-Clarke County has over 14,500 renter households who are in that low income category. And the majority of those are severely burdened by housing costs. They are paying over 50% of their income for rent.
This is a special edition of Athens News Matters, Homelessness and Housing Insecurity in Athens. I'm Alexia Ridley.
And I'm Chris Shoup. The issue of affordable housing has bedeviled Athens for years, and with a faltering economy, the crisis is worsening.
Stay with us for this Athens News Matters special report, Homelessness and Housing Insecurity in Athens.
Morning Edition goes to the source, to the people affected by the news.
This plant could shut down, and a lot of very good people could lose their jobs.
Like this, it's completely ridiculous that we should feel unsafe to go to school.
I'm Noelle King. For stories that matter to you, listen every weekday to Morning Edition from NPR News.
This is an Athens News Matters special report, Homelessness and Housing Insecurity in Athens. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. Today, we're bringing in a wide array of voices to discuss the problem. We'll hear from experts, researchers, and from a neighborhood leader on the front lines of the crisis here in Athens-Clarke County. When we think of those who struggle with housing issues, we don't often think of students. But according to a 2019 report from the National Center for Homeless Education, over 1.3 million public school children were homeless during the 2016-2017 school year. And according to a 2019 Real College survey, 46% of college respondents said that they had experienced some level of housing insecurity in the previous year. Joining me now to talk about how housing insecurity and homelessness affects students are Jermaine Durham, Assistant Professor of Housing and Community Development, and Carrie Smith, Assistant Dean of Students for Student Care and Outreach. Thank you so much for being here today. How big are these issues in our community in comparison with the state or the nation?
So I think part of the problem here is we're not even sure how big the problem is, because a lot of times students don't label themselves as homeless. If we look at what the federal definition is of homelessness, it really is much more inclusive of many of our students than perhaps they would think. If you think about students that may be couch surfing but feel like they've got a roof over their head, or even students that feel comfortable living in their car, they would consider that home. And so for them, they would not necessarily identify as being homeless, but the reality is that they don't have a plan B. Essentially, we're asking them to identify themselves, to come forward and say, I am homeless, which, as we know, there's a stigma behind that. And especially at the University of Georgia, where we have such an incredibly high achieving population and students have worked so hard to get here to begin with, most students don't want to immediately raise their hand and say, hey, I need help more than anyone else. And so is the problem here? Do we have homeless students? Absolutely. But are we sure about how many there are in comparison to everywhere else? I don't think we can be sure, which is why it's important to talk about these things so that students can, one, destigmatize that experience and feel like they can ask for help, and two, to publicize the resources that are available for these students so that they realize that there could be some benefit in identifying as part of this population.
And Jermaine, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think, I would certainly piggyback off of what Ms. Smith has just, identified. I know that, one of the populations that I think is really understudied in housing research is the student population as it relates to being homeless and the housing insecurity that many of these students are facing, because, housing prices for students are extreme when, in comparison to kind of the single family home. So yeah, I think many of these students are certainly facing these issues, and we don't really know the extent to which this is impacting. And I think it would certainly serve the university as well, because when we talk about housing insecurity, we're not just talking about the immediate issue of not having shelter. We're talking about the long-term effects that this can have on education, their performance in the classroom, and a myriad of other issues that come along with housing insecurity. So I think it would certainly serve the university well to really fully understand this given that our goal is to, you know, improve the well-being and education of the students that attend UGA.
I know that both of you work with the university, but can either of you speak to the struggles that elementary or high school students face when their parents are housing insecure or homeless?
Yes, well, I'm not familiar with anyone personally in Athens. I certainly have in my working communities throughout my career have seen, you know, personally and the impacts of, you know, households that you know, just don't have the financial resources. And, you know, there may be some other issues taking place and the impacts that can certainly have on the kind of the truancy that kids have and just that consistency. You know, if there's anything that you know, learning takes, it's consistency. I've worked with kids who were homeless, who were literally living on the streets. You know, it wasn't living at someone's house, who were literally living on the streets. And it's almost impossible to be able to perform at a level that, you know, that is going to be required from the school system. So, and it can be a major, major hindrance on education for young kids.
Yeah, we do a lot of outreach to the homeless liaisons in each county across the state. And I also think that we underestimate the amount of work that our school counselors do in our public school systems and our private schools to make sure that the students who don't have control over their living situation are able to get connected to what they need in order to ameliorate any of the things that are occurring or circumstances that are occurring because of things they can't control.
How do the stresses of housing insecurity or homelessness affect students' development and future success?
Certainly, well, there's a number of studies that's taken a look at housing insecurity and some of the impacts that it has on youth, particularly elementary school kids. With, you know, housing insecurity basically entails frequent moving, residential mobility from one neighborhood to another neighborhood, and kind of the breakdown of the social ties that not only families experience, but the students experience as well. I can remember back in my youth as a child, I had a pretty big move at an early age, and it could be very stressful. So in the long term, that can have a tremendous amount of a negative impact on, you know, social development as well as educational development.
Yeah, I think really when we look at college student success, one of the big pieces is this idea of the sense of belonging. I think for college students, part of how you find a sense of belonging is getting here and finding a shared experience with others. And so there may be a little bit of dissonance in terms of creating connections with people, but also having a big part of your life that you may not necessarily want to discuss.
And finally, what resources exist in our community to help alleviate these issues?
So I'll speak specifically about something that the University of Georgia has, which is Embark at UGA. So the Fanning Institute here on our campus created a statewide network. Essentially what they did is they got all the schools that are in the University System of Georgia and the Technical College System of Georgia, and there are actually a few private institutions that are part of it as well. And they identified one person on each campus that would be tasked with figuring out what the resources are and being responsible for knowing what those resources are, and then connecting with the students. I serve as the designated point of contact, or the DPOC as they call it, here for the University of Georgia. And our campus-based initiative is called Embark at UGA. Embark at UGA really serve students in several different ways, and we kind of outline them in three specific different ways. The first one being individualized support. So we identify a team of people that are unique to that student's experience that really are just their cheerleaders to encourage them, to support them. For many of the students I work with, it's looking for accountability. So maybe it's their academic advisor, maybe it's a faculty member they've connected with, maybe it's someone in their church community that's completely off campus that they consider a close friend. The second part of that is the connection to resources. So understanding what is available in the community. UGA has a student-run food pantry in the Tate Student Center, but there are also three or four different other food pantries that are run by our colleges and schools. And we also have a program through the College of Family and Consumer Sciences, Bulldog Basics, which is a hygiene pantry for students to be able to get free products like toothpaste, deodorant. It's amazing how quickly those things can add up for expenses for students. And then the third part of it, after the connection to resources, are really the programs and events. And this is kind of the most fun part of my job, serving as the DPOC. which is really just students coming together for two things. One are workshops. So figuring out what life skills they want to pick up that maybe they haven't had the opportunity to cultivate prior to getting to UGA. The cool part is really the workshops we have are just what the students request. So they're very, very non-prescriptive, if you will. And that leads me to the last part of those programs and events, which is really community building. I think sometimes we underestimate how important it is for those students to make those connections. And so by coming to an Embark at UGA event, maybe you don't have to tell your story, but inherent in attending is saying that there's something in my life that makes me connected to this group of people. We also work with the health center to see how we can provide emergency funds to students to allow them to get services. And I have certain medical care providers in addition to Mercy Clinic in the community that are able to provide low-income medical services to people. Again, mental health comes up a lot and people ask about the access there. We've been really lucky to have some private donors who've been able to provide money for us to provide emergency funds specifically for that, both at the health center and then also in the community if we need to get the students somewhere where they're going to be in more long-term care, given that we're set up for short-term care here at the University of Georgia.
I think Kara certainly covered a number of important areas, especially as it relates to the students at UGA. Recently, a colleague, one of the FACS Extension agents, Candace Tucker, and I published an eviction resource guide that can be found on UGA's Cooperative Extension Publications webpage. And it provides just kind of an overview of some resources that are related to housing insecurity. May not necessarily be specific to students, but it's certainly a great guide to be able to find some resources for families.
Jermaine Durham is an assistant professor of housing and community development, and Carrie Smith is assistant dean of students for student care and outreach. Thanks again for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
I'm Tim Franks. From the biggest breaking stories of the day to the important issues and trends, we're there.
This is an historic victory and what is a very important day.
This could change world history.
Everybody's going to pay a price. He will, everybody will.
And I am just so happy to be home and to put my feet on this land again.
Another huge development.
Join me and my colleagues for NewsHour from the BBC.
This is an Athens News Matter special report, Homelessness and Housing Insecurity in Athens. I'm Alexia Ridley. On any given night, there are over 200 homeless people in Athens, according to the 2018 Athens-Clark County Homeless Point in Time Count. Of those, 32% were suffering with a serious mental illness. People with mental illness are much more at risk of experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity, which in turn can exacerbate previous mental health issues. Here with us to talk more about this are Evan Mills from Advantage Behavioral Health Systems and Dr. Kimberly Scoba from UGA's Family and Consumer Sciences Department. And I appreciate both of you being here today. I want to start by discussing homelessness in general and what some of the risk factors are for people becoming homeless. And let me start with you, Dr. Scoba, with this question.
Yeah, so there's sort of kind of two categories. There's people who are precariously housed. They might be living, staying on someone's couch, living doubled up. And that often really, you know, there's a number of factors that lead to that. So it's been loss of income. And so for women, often a divorce can lead to a sudden drop of income and housing instability. Health problems, including mental health, can kind of trigger that. And so you see this kind of pattern of instability. And so that's one group and a pretty large group and people who maybe not be counted in the point in time counts. The other is kind of that more visible group that we see downtown Athens, you know, people who are living on the street. Or living in shelters. And I think kind of a similar confluence of events lead people to that situation. I think when you see people living on the street, so probably we have some mental health conditions that make it really difficult to move forward in life and secure a home.
The point that rings true for me, particularly when you're talking about individuals with a co-occurring diagnosis or someone who finds themselves living in an unsheltered situation, are so many of the other things that many of us may take for granted, and that is the obvious lack of an address. But there's also lack of transportation. They may not have their driver's license. They may not have a state ID. They may not have birth certificate or a motor vehicle report, all of which are incredibly important in maintaining or finding a job or employment. And then navigating the social services network can be daunting. And for someone with a mental illness and or a substance addiction that they are already trying to deal with, navigating that can be very intimidating and in many cases confusing.
How do mental health issues increase risk for homelessness? Are there particular mental health illnesses that place people at a higher risk than others?
It's a great question, Alexia. If someone is living in an unstable situation and they are already at risk for instability, dealing with the mental illness that might be impairing them, that sort of creates a downward spiral. One of our goals, you know, with Advantage is, you know, operating kind of a housing first approach where we are trying to get these individuals into a housing situation and then throw services at them because they're much more responsive to the service interventions that we're able to provide once they're in a stable situation. But if you're living in an unstable situation, it can be a hell, for lack of a better term. You know, trying to deal with all the issues that you have and not knowing where your next meal is going to come from, or where your head is going to lay the next night, all the while trying to deal with the paranoia that can be associated, as well as the other predators that are out there. And there are many. So all of these things kind of come to combine and exacerbate the situation, which makes it much more difficult to get out. It's really hard to tell if one behavioral health illness affects homelessness more than others. I will say, you know, we as the safety net provider, our target population are individuals with severe and persistent mental illness, and the majority of those individuals have some type of a schizoaffective disorder or bipolar or severe depression or anxiety disorders.
I think it's important to think about kind of the broader population, especially as we look at pretty significant portion of renters who may be facing evictions and just that the mental health effects that come with financial stress in general. So there's a pretty wide body of research on long-term mental health effects of experiencing unaffordable housing and financial stress. So some of those same things that happen that Evan listed also occur just when people are threatened about losing their home or lose it. And so anxiety and depression and lower levels of mental health. And so it's sort of this cyclical process that the risk of losing your home, you know, creates mental health challenges. And then having lost your home, it's exacerbated. So it's kind of this cycle.
You know, something I'd like to add to that too, just in practicality and when we're operating these programs, is the stigma associated with mental health. And working with local landlords and other housing providers and trying to find affordable housing for these individuals, there is a sort of a stigma associated with Advantage Behavioral Health Systems. And if it's known that a client is a client of Advantage Behavioral Health Systems, there is a certain thought process that goes behind that with local landlords. You know, we've been fairly successful at developing relationships with local landlords that work with our folks, but, you know, some of our folks have caused problems in the past, and unfortunately that can, you know, send a stereotypical message with all individuals with mental health. So that's something that we get to continue to have conversations with local housing providers in that regard.
Let's bring this back to the local level. What are some specific issues that low-income and housing insecure people face in Athens?
What we are trying to figure out is where the affordable housing does exist and how we might be able to best take advantage of that for our particular population. You know, our population is a special needs population. I would not consider them workforce population. So, you know, we are trying to develop relationships and work with landlords to get these individuals into a place that, you know, is affordable and safe to the maximum extent possible, while at the same time providing a system of wraparound supports and leverage resources with other community providers. It's the best thing that we can do right now to get them stable and then get them into a place where, you know, because I will tell you this, and this is a fact, our individuals that, you know, have a severe and persistent mental health disorder that have been on the streets for years and years and years, we have been successful at getting them into a place, getting them employed in many cases, or getting them on public assistance and getting them into a safer place. They can transition into a safer place or a better place or improve their life overall. And I will tell you, and this is the reason why I'm in this business, you're at the grocery store or you're at the gas station and you're doing your thing. And then all of a sudden an individual comes up and you don't recognize them and they see you and they're like, Evan, how are you doing? And, you know, I see them and they're driving a car. They got a kid in the back seat, you know, and they're happy and they're living. And I saw this guy in a tent 10 years ago living by Oconee River. You know, recovery is possible. And these guys do it, and it does happen. And, you know, I will implore you or all your listeners, next time you're out, you know, at the grocery store and the individual bagging your groceries or thinking about that wrapped chicken, the individuals working the chicken plant, or, you know, you're getting your car worked on, that individual may have been in that situation and has now climbed out of it. And a lot of that has to do with their resilience and our ability to find housing providers and provide supports to allow them to walk through that door and get back onto their life of recovery.
Yeah, so in Athens, you know, obviously the housing affordability issue has gotten pretty good attention. And I think just to highlight the people who are earning at the lower end of the income distribution really face significant challenges finding a place that's affordable to live. And so just, you know, if we think about those workers, well, in the restaurant industry, people working in agricultural processing, you know, those are really essential jobs. And they don't quite cut it when it comes to renting an apartment in or a house in Athens. The other component is rental subsidies, so rental assistance where people pay a percentage of their income for rent. They've really been on the decline, and so nationwide, and usually this applies to Athens as well, but one in every four people who are eligible for rental assistance are able to receive it. It's a finite resource, and so that's so not being able to access a subsidy at a time when rent is not affordable for a segment of the population just makes it really challenging.
The rental subsidies, practically, we have been very successful at getting individuals rental subsidies, getting individuals approved for a voucher. What has been difficult is finding landlords who take that voucher. Or finding landlords who are renting within the HUD fair market rate that voucher will support. And that's been sort of the gap, is, you know, finding that participation.
Yeah, and that can be a really big challenge, especially when it's a tight rental market. And so college towns, there are a lot of people competing for the same units. And so there's not a great incentive for landlords to take a voucher, and maybe someone, you know, who has some additional challenges when there is a, you know, long line of people waiting for those or who they could rent to.
Evan Mills from Advantage Behavioral Health Systems and Dr. Kimberly Scoba from UGA's Family and Consumer Sciences Department.
Thank you, Alexia.
Some things you don't really have to question. If you want to believe the dog in that viral video was cooking spaghetti, you go for it. But how your decisions this November will affect your community, that is worth really thinking about. On your NPR station, you get reporting that informs your decisions and challenges what you think you know, because some things are worth that extra mental energy. 2020 election, it's time to listen.
This is a special edition of Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Chris Shoup, and on our show today, we're taking a deep dive into the twin problems of homelessness and housing insecurity in Athens. With rising COVID cases and high unemployment rates, housing insecurity in Athens is an increasing issue, and local nonprofit organizations are working twice as hard to aid their clients while maintaining safe practices. Here to talk with me about housing insecurity and their community efforts to limit it is Lucy Hudgens, director of the ARC United Ministry Outreach Center, Shay Post, executive director for the Athens Area Homeless Shelter, and Davin Welter, executive director of Family Promise of Athens. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Shay, let's start with you. Last time we had you on the program was around the beginning of the pandemic, and the Athens Area Homeless Shelter had just implemented social distancing policies and specific sanitation efforts. How has your response to COVID-19 evolved since then?
We operate two shelters and a rehousing program, so we extended everybody in all of our programs so that no family would be at risk of returning to homelessness during this. And we've been able to safely house everybody across the board in all of our programs.
Wow.
So we've pretty steadily kept up to 10 families at a time in shelter through a local hotel since all of this started.
Now, I've got to stop you because you say all that as if it was no big deal. Certainly moving families and individuals from a group area into a hotel had to be massive. How many folks did you have helping you?
Well, it's been a team effort with all of our staff. Our staff has been amazing, and it was a massive undertaking. It's been a huge ordeal, but we've done it, and it's been worth it. We have about 60 children that we are sheltering or housing right now. That's roughly 30 families that we've been able to keep safe. And it's not just us, it's in partnership with the county providing the funding to be able to increase our capacity to do this with Campus Kitchen, with Hugh Atchison. It's been a partnership across the board with the community.
Now, Davin, I was reading where your facility is currently assisting three families, but in an effort to help in preventing the spread of COVID-19, you guys had to shut down in-person operations. Is that still the case?
So actually what happened was when COVID broke, our next congregation was going to be Athens First United Methodist Church, and we also moved our families into the same hotel that Shay is using. And but for us, that was not sustainable. So fortunately, we had a board member and a host congregation with us that was very generous and donated their facility. So Athens Church of Christ, which is out on Mars Hill Road. And so we were in hotels for 3 weeks, and then we moved to Athens Church of Christ, setting up very diligent policies and procedures. So we require everyone to have a mask when they volunteer at our space, and also to try to stay as socially distanced as possible, which fortunately in that facility we're able to do.
Wow, just amazing. What about you, Lucy? First, perhaps a quick overview of what the ARC does for those listeners who may not be familiar.
Yeah, sure. So the ARC is a nonprofit in Athens, and we provide emergency financial assistance for rent and utilities, basic needs when families or households have experienced an unexpected financial loss. So ideally, we are a safety net for low-income workers whose income has been negatively affected. And of course, with COVID, that is pretty widespread in our community. So we're currently doing rent and utility assistance.
Well, are any of you testing or screening clients for symptoms of COVID-19? About how about that end of things?
We revamped our intake process to do it outside. You know, it's less complicated than it sounds, really. We just sit at a picnic table. We wear masks. We sit several feet apart from clients and wing it.
In the event that you encountered someone with symptoms, that doesn't mean that they lose access to anything. How do you handle that?
Well, we've been really fortunate so far in that we haven't had any cases. I think it's because we made the decision very early on in March to shut Barber down and to move people into hotel. And I think that was the smartest thing we could have done. And we've been fortunate so far. So we have not encountered anyone. We've had a couple scares and we got testing done right away and we quarantined when that was the case. But so far, we've been fortunate.
Well, that's great news. Davin, how about you?
Yeah, we also had a scare. So we had a volunteer who actually tested positive. You know, again, we have very strict guidelines in place to prevent, you know, the spread. But once we found that out, we had the Athens Free Mobile Clinic come to our static site there at Athens Church of Christ, and and all of our guests, and invited all volunteers who may have had some contact to come and have a test. And fortunately, we found that it was not spread, that all of our guests came up negative, and our volunteers did as well, too.
How about you, Lucy?
Well, currently, we are still closed to individuals coming into the ARC, but what we've been really able to do is put everything remotely. So we're screening everyone over the phone, through email, through fax, through our Dropbox. So we're actually able to respond to and meet the needs as quickly as we could. If people were walking in, we're just meeting the needs as creatively as possible.
Well, Lucy, I want to keep it with you, since the ARC works with individuals facing job insecurity. That's obviously an effect of the pandemic. How has this impacted the need for your services? Is the housing insecure population rising with the job insecure population as well?
Oh, definitely. We've got folks trying to access services constantly. And what's really interesting about it is that 80% of the individuals that we've helped since March have not accessed ARC services before. So we're seeing such a wide variety of individuals, and we're seeing too that COVID is touching everyone, not just a certain population. And with that, rent is the primary concern and the primary need right now. Athens has a lot of renters, and Athens has a lot of low wage renters. And typically for our neighbors, they're spending over 50 to 60% of their income on rent. So without work or layoffs, short hours, over time, rent accumulates. And with the moratorium in place, it kind of served as a safety net, if you will. So once that was lifted in July, I would say we've seen our numbers just triple as far as people needing help with rent.
And Chris, just to give you some numbers too, I looked at the National Low Income Housing Coalition website, and Athens-Clarke County has over 14,500 renter households who are in that low income category. And the majority of those are severely burdened by housing costs, which what severely burdened means is that they are paying over 50% of their income for rent. So that's a pretty significant number. That's there that really is at risk for homelessness.
Well, Shay, would you say that the numbers are about the same in your facility? I mean, are you seeing folks more so coming to you for a need for services that you've never seen before?
We've tripled our shelter capacity. Mm. But also, again, we run a rapid rehousing program, and here in Athens, we have the money, we have state grants to house people, but we literally cannot place people in apartments because we can't find affordable housing for them.
Shay, I want to keep it with you here. It sounds obvious, but give our listeners a little more detail about how might a housing insecure individual experience the pandemic differently from someone who is housing secure?
I think a term that we've all become intimately familiar with is shelter in place, right? And in addition to all of the worry that we're all collectively experiencing right now, imagine having loaded on top of that the worry of not having a place. To answer your question in short, it exasperates everything that we're already feeling.
Shay, you said that perfectly. We do take for granted that we can shelter in place, but when we speak of shelter, for a single working mom with three young kids, that is her only shelter. That is her only option to keep her family safe. And when she has, landlords calling and threatening to evict her, it is so stressful right now for families who are trying to figure out how to work, or I can't work, how do I pay for this, how do I do that? It's just extremely, extremely stressful.
And I would add that I think most at-risk individuals are also essential workers, and so they're having to work in jobs where they are especially vulnerable to contracting the disease. So most of these folks are essential workers, and they're on the front lines.
Good point. Shay, you had mentioned earlier the number of children who are being housed through your program. With schools reopening, can you tell us a bit more about how that has affected those families with children specifically?
I would say, first of all, that while we are sheltering and housing a large number of children. It's just a small percentage of the number of children who are experiencing homelessness right now in Athens County.
Wow.
At the end of the last school year, I believe the count was over 800 that had been identified as having experienced homelessness during the school year. So it's an enormous problem here. And it impacts these families tenfold, a hundredfold more so than families who, again, have a safe, stable base to manage this crisis. Children who do not have that don't have a tablet or a laptop or internet access. Fortunately for the children in our care, we're able to create a learning pod for those children in our different locations. And Davin, I know that your agency works with children too, and you guys are probably just like we are trying to figure out how you're going to tackle the school year.
Fortunately, our static site at this point in time has very strong internet service, so that helps. And CCSD has been very good at providing, you know, laptops. So those two factors are good. But we are setting up at the static site individual workstations for each of the children for them to work. But you think about all those families who are out there that don't have access to internet or a place where you can focus and have some quiet.
Well, I want to turn back to Lucy. Lucy, you had mentioned the number of evictions were up. Can you tell us a bit more about how amicable or perhaps not landlords are being?
So it is split down the middle. There are some that are actually doing a very good job working with folks, but then I do have a large majority that are just relentless in getting, you know, rent money paid without really considering what individuals are going through.
Well, what can listeners do to help? Lucy, let's keep it with you. How can our listeners help?
So I think the biggest thing is if you find someone that is facing eviction or is just having a hard time financially, really telling them about what we do and turning them to the ARC. There are just so many people who haven't been through this before, and so they don't know where to begin to look for services. And then, of course, we're always accepting donations so that we can in turn provide those to individuals for housing and utilities.
Davin, how about helping Family Promise? How can we do that?
Folks can volunteer with us. And again, we've got procedures in place that keep folks safe. Another, I think, and this is, I think, true of all three of our organizations, and that is just sharing our message on social media. And then last, of course, like Lucy, is to make a financial gift.
And finally, Shay, what about the shelter? How can folks help?
Financial donations, to be honest, are the most useful because then we can put them to use for the families in the ways that are needed most. But if that's not possible, we have a wish list that includes everything from trash bags to children's cough syrup, and that helps us enormously. It's an Amazon wish list. It's accessed through our website, which is helpathenshomeless.org. And we need landlords willing to work with us. So if you are a landlord or you have friends, families, neighbors who are landlords, please reach out to us, talk to us, learn about our program. We are solid, we are steady, we are excellent partners, and we want to work with you.
Well, there you have it. Lucy Hudgens is the director of the ARC. Shay Post is executive director for the Athens Area Homeless Shelter. And Davin Welter is executive director of Family Promise. For more details about how you can make a difference, visit this story on our website at wuga.org. Thank you guys for stopping by today. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
Every day, NPR's All Things Considered includes news that keeps you ahead of the curve.
If this issue is not important enough for us to draw a line in the sand, what issue is?
Plus, the unexpected.
The wing, the skin, the neck, the heart, you're making chicken meatballs, cooking the knee cartilage.
All Things Considered from NPR News.
This is an Athens News Matters special report, Homelessness and Housing Insecurity in Athens. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. We're joined now by Gwen Littleton, a neighborhood leader with Family Connection, Communities and Schools of Athens. And I want to thank you for joining us today. And I understand you have a personal story that you can share with us about our topic today of homelessness and housing insecurity. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
It was frustrating. It was really frustrating. It was hard. My job went from working almost 7 days a week to 5 days a week to the weekends, and then every other weekend to maybe one weekend a month. I had to scound it up, and I would live with family members, and I didn't have too many family members here, which was heartache. I didn't, didn't live on the streets. I was lucky enough to scrape up money, and I was able to move into the in-town street for a while, and that went on for like 4 years, and that was a hard situation. It was very, very depressing, okay? Very depressing. I can relate to people that is struggling on the real tip.
You were very fortunate, really, that you never actually went without, say, a roof that you could afford to pay for, even if it wasn't an apartment, it was a hotel, or family or friends letting you stay, because some people find themselves in a car if they're fortunate to have a car, or on the street.
I live some days in a car, mainly, I guess, because of proudness. I guess I didn't want people to know, I probably could have probably went somewhere, but then I'm like, no, because they would know and they would talk, and I guess that's sometimes how it is. We just don't want people to know, don't want people to talk.
I believe everybody can understand sometimes when we're really struggling with something, you don't just want to share with everyone and open yourself up to their judgment, even if they may not judge you, but they might, and you don't want to open yourself up to that.
They might not do nothing kind of mean, but they're going to look at you differently, and you don't really want that. You just don't want that. You don't want that, oh, I feel sorry for her, even though you may want them to help you.
And then sometimes they don't let it go, even when your situation improves. You move on, but sometimes they may not move on.
That is so true. That is so true.
Tell me, what were some of your regular concerns during your period of homelessness, even when you had shelter? What were you concerned with? Safety, food, bills? What were you most concerned with?
All of those bills, safety, because when I was in a hotel, I didn't know, and it was like people would come, and it was different people would move in and out, and it was just not a real good safe place, but it was safer than just staying on the streets, you know what I mean?
What do you think that time sort of taught you, or how did that period shape your understanding of the world?
Oh, yeah. Good question. It taught me, and it definitely made me see the world and people different. In retrospect of who people are, you never really know what they go through. Now, I talked to some people that was there, and when you see people that you know, and they're in the same space, you like, whoa, you know what I mean? You kind of feel bad, but you kind of feel like, okay, so if that can happen to them, not like misery love company, but you're like, okay, so we can all get this together. We can all be getting, this is not the world. It's not the end of the world. You know what I mean? There was one time when like, okay, so is this going to be it? Is this how my life is going to be? Am I never going to get better? Is this how the rest of my life is going to be? I believe in God, and I believe that he don't let me go through stuff. You know, he let me go through stuff for me to learn, and I'll be better. In part, not my misery, but my learning to other people, so they won't go through what I went through. Or if they come across somebody that go through something I went through, they'll be able to better equip themselves to help other people.
Can you tell me a little bit now about your role as a neighborhood leader?
Oh, yes. One of the wonderful things of my life. It's a community job. I love giving back to the community. I love helping my clients, my residents. I love meeting with the people of business, and I love meeting with the people that's helping partnership. I love the school aspect of it. I love meeting with the people that's learning and teaching other people about the census, getting the vote out. It's a lot of components to it. It's a lot of things we do. It's a wonderful job.
What are some misconceptions that other people have about homelessness?
They lazy. They don't want to work. I believe most people are down on their luck. Just need a hand up. not necessarily a hand out, but a hand up. Just reach down and pick them up, give them, do something, show them where something is, teach them something new, get them a budget, just help them.
And my last question, how does it feel for you to be able to be in this situation where you can help other people who may find themselves struggling with homelessness or serious issues like that?
Love it. I love giving back. I love helping somebody. I just think it makes my day. I think that's why I'm here on earth. One of the reasons why I'm here on earth. I think I just want to be able to help somebody. And I kind of tell people, now y'all go and help somebody now, because somebody gonna come there. They say, why you do that? Because I like to help them. I think if you help somebody, it's a thing that's paying it forward. Go head on and do something for somebody.
Well, I want to thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really appreciate it.
I hope it helps somebody. I hope somebody go out and do something good for somebody.
You've just heard from Gwen Littleton, a neighborhood leader with Family Connection.
You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Our producers are Colin Bergen, Laura Yordanova, Jessica Wurst, Gemma DiCarlo, Gene Davis, and Martin Matheny. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia. Of course, you can always reach out to us with your questions and story ideas. We're at WUGA FM on Facebook, and you can email us at wuga@uga.edu. And don't forget, you can listen back to this special episode and all of our stories on our website at wuga.org.
And don't forget that as we prepare for our conversations with candidates for the Georgia House of Representatives, District Attorney, and Clark County Sheriff, we're looking for your questions for the candidates. You can email us at wuga@uga.edu with your questions for the candidates. For Chris Shoup, I'm Alexia Ridley, and this has been Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay informed, and thanks for spending part of your day with us.